Microsoft releases the Chromified Edge for testing, and more coming up on today's episode of The Latest in Tech News. Hey Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is The Latest in Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and you're in for a treat. Today we're going to be covering, well, Microsoft releasing its Chromified Edge, Huawei open to, I guess, selling its 5G modems, but only to Apple. The real truth about how the 5G network, specifically for Verizon, how that's going. I guess some news that Twitter's doing to take care of some spam apparently going on. Facebook wants to circle Africa with an undersea data cable, and a Galaxy S10's fingerprint reader was thwarted by a 3D printer, and finally we'll be looking at the Red Hydrogen 1 Titanium smartphone. You will not believe the sticker price on this puppy. So we'll also be getting into some tech trivia today in tech history and more. Before we do, welcome everybody. It's another week, so hope you guys are having a great week so far. Let us know how you're doing. And with that being out of the way, let's head on over to some trivia, shall we? All right, last episode I asked you guys, what is the most popular monitor resolution? And oh my goodness, Twitter blew up. It was mainly one individual. They were bound and determined to get this answer right, but they got close and missed. But to be fair, though, it's not really a standard resolution by any means, but it's the most popular. The answer, and by the way, I got to give you credit, Marie Jones, for guessing on what the correct or most popular monitor resolution is. You got close a number of times. The correct answer to what is the most popular monitor resolution is 1366 by 768. Now, keep in mind, that's standard resolution. How popular is it? Because you're like, well, hey, Taylor, you lying to me? No, here's the statistics. Close to 26% of desktops have this resolution and 66% of laptops. Now, something to keep in mind, this little side note, it is not full HD. And be wary of vendors looking to rip you off. Essentially, they're trying to tell you, hey, you could get, 720 or 1080p on this monitor. Thing is, they're kind of shaving off a couple of inches off the side to try and rip you off. Make every effort to purchase 1080p or greater or resolutions for monitors of 1920 by 1080 and larger. If you guys are looking for that 1080p, if you're looking for that 4K, if you're looking for that 8K, always go for a high resolution because everybody else is still stuck in a whole 720p and lower, which means anything below that 720p is going to be 480, and that's the best your monitor resolution is going to do. So please double check that when you're looking to purchase monitors or laptops. So, because they'll try to get you on that. So a little bit of a fun note. So I know you guys are interested, wondering, hey, Taylor, how do I get to play along with the trivia questions that you have going on? Well, be sure to follow us on Twitter at TechNewsGadget. Usually every evening we have a little trivia question that goes out with the hashtag LITNTrivia. And once you see that, immediately start replying. Here's how it works. Submit your answer on Twitter by replying to that tweet with a question for today's trivia. The link to this tweet will also be listed in today's show notes for this episode. The first correct answer will be announced in the next episode along with your Twitter username. And I'll give you credit if you're close, so don't worry about that. But if you can get the answer right, you guys get bragging rights. See how that works? You can tell your friend, hey, I got an answer right and I got mentioned on a show. See, I'm cool. See, how about that? So, the question for episode number 98, this episode, is what year was the PlayStation 3 released? So, post your answers as quick as you can. If you're following us on Twitter, hey, you'll get this notified before the show is released, because I typically send out the tweet for the question just before the show comes out. So have fun, guys. Okay, moving right along. Before we can get into the tech news today, we always have to take a look back on today in tech history, and being that today is April 8th, 2019, on this day in 1983, John Sculley is named president and CEO of Apple Computers after Steve Jobs convinced him to leave his position as president of PepsiCo. Now, while Steve Jobs wanted a position of president for himself, then CEO Mike Mercola did not think Jobs was ready to take on that responsibility. Well, Jobs wanted Sculley based on his success growing Pepsi's market share against Coke. He wanted that same type of marketing success for Apple against IBM. Part of computer industry lore, Jobs reportedly asked Sculley, "Do you want to sell sugar water for the rest of your life, or do you want to come with me and change the world?" That's just who Steve Jobs was. Ultimately, Sculley and Jobs entered into a power struggle. Sculley convinced Apple's board of directors to snip Jobs of all power within the company, and Jobs left Apple. That's how it worked. One has to wonder how the computer industry would be different today if Steve Jobs had been given lead of this company in 1983 instead of Apple opting for, quote, adult supervision. Recent history with companies such as Facebook, Google, and even Apple since Jobs' return have shown that visionaries can make great leaders of technology companies. Well, obviously. Also, on this day in tech history, in 1991, Java development begins in earnest. On this day, Sun's Java team moves from Sun Microsystems to work in secret on its Oak development project, later renamed Java. And if you didn't know, well, now you know. And with that out of the way, we can move on to today's feature story. Now you might be wondering, well, what's this feature story all about? Well, the story is about Microsoft releasing its Google Chrome-like Edge browser for testing. This article comes to us courtesy of CNET, and I just gotta say, after I stopped laughing my head off and I stuck my head back on my body, I proceeded to laugh again, and I had to take like an hour break because I couldn't. It's just too funny. See, okay, let's get into the article. Microsoft, having given up on its own core browser technology, has released test versions of its Edge browser built instead on the same foundations as Google's Chrome. Now, in these first builds, we are very much focused on the fundamentals and have not yet included a wide range of feature and language support that will be coming later, said Joe Balfour, Microsoft's corporate vice president for Windows, in a blog post today. You'll start to see the differences from the current Microsoft Edge, including subtle design finishes, support for a broader selection of extensions, and the ability to manage your sign-in profile. Okay, I'm going to try and get through this article. For years, Microsoft had tried to reclaim some of its browser power by stripping away the legacy technology that hobbled Internet Explorer and releasing the modernized Edge instead. But it never caught on widely, oddly enough. And in December, Microsoft announced a plan to rebuild Edge on Chromium, the open source underpinnings of Chrome that's also used in several other browsers. You can download the software for Windows 10 computers from Microsoft Edge's Insider site. Different versions of Chromium-based Edge can be installed and run side-by-side, so if you want to do any testing or developing or what have you, have fun with that. The new version of Edge is based on Chromium, an open-source project run by Google. Other browsers that rely on Chromium include Brave, Vivaldi, Opera, and Samsung Internet. Bet you didn't know that. Using Google software gives access to a mature and frequently updated software project while ensuring websites aren't likely to suffer from incompatibility problems. However, it also means Google's already formidable power over the web, deciding in effect which technologies are supported and which aren't is that much stronger, because currently Chrome dominates the browser market. Apple's Safari, a cousin of Chrome, and Mozilla's Firefox remain independent. So, yeah. Microsoft's Internet Explorer dominated browsing for years, but Firefox dented that power 15 years ago and injected new life into the technology, even as Microsoft let it languish. Chrome arrived a decade ago, built on the same WebKit core as Safari, but Google parted ways, creating its own fork of WebKit called Blink That's the core part of Chromium. By default, Chromium-based Edge search sends the search traffic to Microsoft's Bing search engine. I don't know why they wouldn't. You can also add other search engines if you so desire, or switch back to Google if you want. Search traffic from browsers is an important financial consideration since they can lead to revenue from search ads. Oh no, now you wonder. Now you sit there and you wonder, oh, why is Chrome so popular? I wonder why. Google just went, hey guys, check this out. Hey Microsoft, check it out. Hey, hang on, we'll take care of this from here. Just get your ugly cousin Internet Explorer out of here. What, he's like 15, 30 years old? Dude's bald and has like one hair on top of his head that, you know, flaps in the wind. Like, I gotta laugh. So essentially what I'm done reading the article now. So essentially what Microsoft has done is they said, in effect, we have no idea how to make a better browser. So then they looked to Google and they went, you guys made a really good browser. Oh, and it's based off of an open source software. Could we use that? Yoink. And they did, and Google went, hey guys, you know you're using what we built, right? Pretty cool, huh? Oh, gosh. See, we can do it better than you can. You sit there and you're wondering and worried about, hey guys, what's going on? I gotta laugh. I don't know. Do you guys find this funny or not? I mean, I find this hilarious. Like, I wanted Internet Explorer to die so many times, so many years ago. And it finally did. And then Microsoft went, hey guys, we got the next big thing coming. And everybody's, oh, really? It's better than Chrome? Because like everybody was on Chrome and Firefox. And you're like, yeah, you anything better? And you're like, yeah, we got something called Edge. And everyone went, cool. Not. And then they just like walked off. And Microsoft, what the heck is going on? It's like, I don't know. Maybe you guys are drinking your own Kool-Aid, okay? Maybe you're drinking, you know, fluoride in your water. Maybe you should be getting some of that mineral water stuff. Figure out what the heck to do, because you guys, you're like a decade behind in dust. Like Firefox came in, unseated you, and then Google Chrome went, hey guys, check it out. Boom. You're not even in top five anymore, Microsoft. You guys got a lot of work to do to bring yourself back, but I don't know. For those of you who are fans of Microsoft, do you think this could finally be the start of finally a decent, good web browser? I don't know. Let me know in the comment section down below if you're watching this via video, or you can always send me your thoughts on Twitter at TechNewsGadget. And if you agree with me and you're like me, you can just sit there and laugh for like the remainder of the day or however long you're listening to this, just at how hilarious it is that Microsoft was beaten by Google in the browser race. I'm sorry, I got too much entertainment out of reading this article. Let's move on to the next one, shall we? Alright, moving right along. Huawei is apparently open to selling its 5G modems, but only to Apple. And this is where it gets a little bit weird. You see, for years, Huawei has been developing its own high-powered processors and modems, all to power its own big portfolio of mobile devices. And so far, the company has refused to sell any of those to its competitors. We've learned, however, that the company might be softening its stance. A source with knowledge of the situation has confirmed to Engadget that Huawei is now open to selling its 5G Balong 5000 chipsets, but only to one company, Apple. Okay, this is me here speculating. I think the only reason they would be doing something like this is because they're looking at Apple and are going, you guys aren't going to have any 5G phones available until like 2021. Decent, like 2020, 2021, and everybody else is going to be like 2-3 years ahead of you guys. Y'all need to catch up. So maybe they're like, come on, guys. Here's a boost. Okay, back to the article. Such a deal would be unusual, to say the least. Chip sales aren't exactly Huawei's forte, not usually what they do, and a company representative said earlier this year in China that Huawei Balong is mainly for supporting Huawei smart products such as phones and IoT products, and is currently for their internal use only. For Huawei, a company that's been gunning to become the world's largest smartphone maker in 2020, even trying to beat out Samsung, offering 5G as an olive branch to one of its biggest rivals is surprising. At this point, though, it's unclear whether the companies have engaged in any conversations. Neither Huawei or Apple has responded to requests for comments at the time of publication. So, A recent report from Fast Company, however, cites an anonymous source who claims that Apple has, quote, lost confidence in Intel after the chipmaker failed to meet certain development deadlines. When asked for comment, an Intel spokesperson simply said the company, quote, plans to monitor customer devices launched in 2020 with its XMM8160 5G multi-mode modem. So, we'll have to see how this goes. Meanwhile, Apple's protracted legal battles with Qualcomm continue to make murky the possibility of a future 5G partnership. So that might be why Apple's like, well, we don't really have anybody else to turn to for a chipset. And Huawei is like, well, how about us? No, I mean, yes. I mean, shoot, dang it. We need to get into China. We need to get into India. And we're having a really difficult time. And Samsung's kicking our butt all across the globe. And the people here in the U.S. are like, well, I'm not going to pay $1,200 for a phone. We're on that later. Will they? I don't know. Depends on the value that you guys put in. If you make a good quality product that stands the test of time and is worth more than the price tag that you put on it, yeah, they'll buy it. But if they don't, well, you're going to be like, well, if you want me to do bargain hunting, sorry guys, I'll just go to Walmart or my local thrift shop and maybe find some, you know, battered old cloak to wear. So that's what I'll do. So that's my thoughts. Moving right along to some more news going on. By the way, if you guys are interested in any of the articles covered today, you can always head on over to technewsgadget.net/97. Sorry, I just had to pop up a screen really quick because I forgot. I was like, what episode are we on? Or is it 98? Ah, shoot.
It better not be.
Wait just a second. Let me check it because I never write it down. I never write it down, so I always forget. 98. Sorry. Yep, because I did it. The other one. Yes, 98. So, or you can just head on over to technewsgadget.net. By the way, if you're actually watching this on YouTube, I'll have the correct links. And if you're listening to this via the podcast, you can click show more, get more information. You should be able to get all the information that you need to there. Apparently, that's what I get for it being a Monday and me not double checking the number. Stupid Taylor, stupid. So, let's move on, shall we? I can't make myself look like an idiot all the time. I do that plenty of times at work. In case you're wondering, this isn't my full-time job. I actually deliver mail for a living. And, my coworkers and I usually have a pretty good... Well, it's actually a long-time running inside joke, which is quite entertaining, to say the least, as far as I'm going to go. I don't know. Well, okay. I'll divulge a little bit. They like when I send them stupid photos of, like, memes and stuff. And then I sit there and say, don't you do any work? And I'm like, yeah, I pre-planned all this stuff to send you today. And it's sending it on autopilot. And they go, stop sending me stuff. But it's honestly pretty funny. And they wind up laughing. And then they can't get any work done. And then they whine and complain at me. But they still get the work done fine. So I don't know what the big deal is. If you guys just did your work, you wouldn't have to worry about... Anyways, let's get on to the article, shall we? So PC Magazine, PC Mag, decided to look into the real truth of Verizon's 5G network. Now, keep in mind, this just rolled out over the weekend, plus maybe Friday and Thursday prior to that. So it's still very early on for Verizon's new 5G network, probably too early. The author spent about 6 hours testing out Big Red's brand new 5G network on day two, which was Friday, April 5th, of its launch in Chicago. It's very small and not very reliable, but it's a beginning. And here's the basic good news. Across 291 tests, 64 of which were performed on 5G and the rest on 4G, the Moto Z3 phone with its new 5G Moto mod got better average download speeds than an LG V40 being tested on 4G in the same place. I saw 600 megabytes per second peaks on a 5G device at several different cell sites compared with 400 megabyte per second peaks on the 4G device. That's a 50% improvement already. Hooray, right? Well, it's going to get a little bit technical and detailed. If all you want is buying advice, here's your advice. Don't buy, at least in April of 2019. Verizon's 5G network is a few cell sites Running early firmware that lacks key features, software upgrades, and further build-outs will turn this network into something you want, but you don't want it right now. Now, it's unlike Verizon to launch something like this before its time, but the carrier seems to have been in a race with South Korea to be able to advertise the availability of the world's first 5G-capable phone. Verizon originally scheduled its launch for April 11th, but moved it back to April 5th and then April 4th, seemingly as it heard more about the Korean carrier's plan. As Verizon's Moto Z3 mod went on sale on April 3rd, and a Korean Samsung Galaxy S10 5G went on sale April 5th, I guess Verizon technically gets bragging rights first for first 5G and 5G phone. But I can't help but think this is one of the rare cases where the marketers won out over the engineers at Verizon's. Lots of things are still currently missing from this network. Would it have hurt Verizon in the long haul to hold back until mid-May when the Samsung phone is launching in the US? I don't think it would have been in terms of actual sales. It would have been more of a Verizon-worthy launch. But then it wouldn't have been able to break first comment. Hey guys, I did it. Like some YouTube commenter hopped up on, you know, Red Bull. Now, this story is going to mention some more future software updates as a solution for nearly everything. Because the final revision of the 5G standard only just came out in December, the carrier's infrastructure providers just haven't been able to debug and turn on all of the features they've been promising yet. The good news is that a lot of them will come as over-the-air updates. So they'll double check things in late May and possibly again in July to see how things are developing. We won't be going over this entire article, so if you guys are interested in that, we'll have a link in the show notes for this episode so you can go ahead and check it out further there. Just make sure it's the actual one that you're listening to right now or watching. You get the correct link. So there you go. Oh, thank you, Twitter. So moving on to some more tech news. There's a lot of tech news and gadget news going on today. I don't know so much as the gaming news, but there's a lot of news that just dropped today. Almost too much, in fact, for me to figure out what best to post and talk about here. But to cut down on spam, Twitter is cutting the number of accounts that you can follow per day. Now, here's the funny thing. I distinctly remember them doing something like this prior, maybe like a handful of years ago, a couple years ago or so. But apparently, Twitter just took another big step to help boot spammers off of its platform, because everybody knows that if it's not set on Twitter, it's not set at all. And if it's set on Twitter, y'all better respect me, because this is where, you know, all the outrage and the offensiveness and, you know, people beating each other up and that, all the toxicity exists is here on Twitter. Okay. So apparently it's cutting the number of accounts Twitter users can follow from 1,000 per day to just 400. Now, here's this grand idea with the new limit is that it's helping prevent spammers from rapidly growing their networks by following and then unfollowing Twitter accounts in a bulk, aggressive, or indiscriminate manner, something that's a violation of the Twitter rules, which has always been. So, like, I don't care. I don't follow every person that follows me. I don't do follow for follow. This is something that hasn't existed only exclusively to Twitter. This is on YouTube. This is on Twitch. This is on Mixer. This is on virtually every single social platform, this follow for follow stupid feature, which I really wish people wouldn't, because you're like artificially boosting numbers up. And anyways, long story short, number of services were recently banned from Twitter's API for doing the same thing. Several companies had been offering tools that allowed their customers to automatically follow a large number of users with little effort. This works as a growth tactic because, well, some people will follow back out of courtesy, without realizing that they followed a bot. The companies also offer tools to mass unfollow the Twitter accounts of those who didn't return the favor by following the bot back. Although not necessarily. They call it a bot here in this article. It could have actually been a real individual. And it just gets weird. Other automated tools were often provided as well, like ones for creating those annoying auto DMs, for example. Twitter at the beginning of the year suspended a good handful of apps for violating its rules around following and follow churn. But booting the companies only addressed those that aimed to profit by providing spammy automations as a service that others could use. To really take on the spammers, the limits around how many people Twitter users can follow also had to be changed at the API level. However, some people believe Twitter has gone far enough was today's move. In response to Twitter's tweets about the new limits, several have responded to say, well, why the number 400 was chosen, as that was still far more than a regular Twitter user would need to follow in a single day, or at all, period. Some users said it took years to get to the point of following hundreds of people. Meanwhile, the business use case for following 400 people is somewhat debatable, as DMs can be left open and companies can tweet a special URL to send customers to their inbox to continue a conversation, no following or unfollowing needed on either side. Now, while smaller businesses may still employ mass following techniques to attract customers, this at least puts a cap on more of those efforts. Twitter explained to TechCrunch why it chose the number. We looked at follower behavior at various thresholds and selected 400 as a reasonable limit that stopped most spam while not affecting legitimate users, a spokesperson said. They also pointed to a longer Twitter thread on the topic from the head of site integrity, Yoel Roth. So, the new limits and the spam dealer crackdown aren't the only changes that Twitter has taken in recent months to tackle the spam problem on its platform. Hey guys, how about deal with the toxicity? No, I'm kidding. It also updated its reporting tools to allow users to report spam, like fake accounts, and it introduced new security measures around account verification and signup, alongside other changes focused on more proactively identifying spammers. So, combined, I guess they're trying to deal with a lot of it. The short-term impact of these changes could be a drop in Twitter's monthly user growth that they recently stopped sharing because, well, who cares? But it's a bet on the long-term health of the platform instead. What do you guys think? Let me know down in the comment section, but yay, Twitter! How about you guys just keep those limits in place and then go, yeah, see, we don't need all of this weird follow-and-follow thing. I had plenty of experience reading about all of this stuff. Like, this is honestly something that I've read exactly almost word for word, like 5, maybe 6 years ago, I want to say. And I was reading this and talking to this person and talking to that person. And then I ran a short little test on one of my, I think it's now defunct Twitter handles. Because I ran it for a short term project and I was like, oh yeah, it's kind of stupid. And it is. I mean, here's the thing. Guys, if you have time, you don't need to follow 400, 500, 1,000 people a day. If you find there are interesting people that you want to follow, that you want to keep up to date with, follow them. But don't go crazy on the whole follow limit, otherwise your feed is going to be spammed with so much stuff you're not even going to get to the important people that you want to see. Which is why it's always helpful to always trim your following list, who you're following, and always cut back on that just in case there's, you know, things change. Just like you would do with Facebook, just to clean things up, just so that you could see important tweets or posts from people who you want to see. Otherwise, Twitter's going to have to introduce this weird new feature called Notification Bell. See notification first, unless they do that already. If they do, great. If they don't, well, it'll probably be coming soon because, you know, apparently that doesn't mean much to follow somebody on Twitter and you actually have to follow them. Oh, gosh, I can tell you, it just seems like it just gets a little bit stupider every single day. Just a little bit, but good job for Twitter cracking down at least on this to help alleviate some problems. All right, moving on to some more tech news. Facebook wants to circle Africa with an undersea data cable. Apparently, Facebook is in a quest to connect more of Africa than, we might have ascertained to begin with. It may be on a quest to have it practically encircling the continent. Wall Street Journal sources maintain that Facebook is in talks to run an undersea data cable nicknamed Simba. Yeah, really, not making it up, that would run around much of Africa. Details are far and few between, but it might link to existing beach access points in countries along the eastern, northern, and western coastlines with the help of telecoms like MTN Group and Vodafone. This would help improve access to Facebook for more of the continent and might just lower the social network's data cost by cutting out in-between companies. Now, the company wouldn't directly comment on the hoped-for data pipe, but did say it looks all over the world. Obviously, when planning underwater cable routes, the Wall Street Journal cautioned that a deal wasn't guaranteed and might fall apart. Now, Facebook is no stranger to giant data cable projects, but they tend to focus on links between continents. This would focus on improving access within a single continent, and it might be vital if Facebook wants to continue adding users now that over 2.3 billion people are already signed up on Facebook. Internet service as a whole can be unreliable in Africa due to a developing infrastructure that doesn't always offer fast, consistent links to the rest of the world. This would ensure that all Facebook services, particularly popular ones like WhatsApp, are within reach and perform as well as you'd expect in Africa. Moving right along, we got some gadget news. Apparently the Galaxy S10's fingerprint reader was thwarted by a 3D printer. Apparently, here's a subtitle, it could take someone just 15 minutes to print a viable fake biometric marker. So now we go right to the problem that people have with these cool fingerprint scanners, which is, well, you know, you could just chop somebody's finger off, or you could print their finger. Oh gosh, now we get back into the whole sci-fi and mystery and drama and crime investigations of, you know, movies and TV shows gone by and current. Just rehashing it over and over again. Can't we have anything new? It sounds like we're just going around on this merry-go-round and again and again and again. Anyways, the fingerprint reader in the Samsung Galaxy S10 has caused a few issues already, such as incompatibility with some types of screen protectors. The in-display scanner uses ultrasound to read the physical ridges of your fingerprint, supposedly making the device more secure. So you shouldn't be able to press a photo of owner's prints against the reader to unlock the device, for example, so they can't actually take the photo of it. But it seems people are already finding ways to thwart the sensor. An Imgur user named Dark Shark claims they used a 3D printed version of their fingerprint to unlock the S10. They snap, oh great, now they just gave them more ideas. So now you're going to have Anonymous going around saying, hey guys, if on the dark web, if anybody happens to like capture another person and need access to their phone, just make them print a 3D copy of their fingerprint. Just like say, if you don't give me the password to your phone, I'm going to make a 3D copy of your... It sounds like a bad comedy joke in like a CSI type setting where they're like, have the victim and they're like, hey, if you don't do this, you know, we're going to print your thumb. And they're like, oh no, don't print my thumb. And then they print their thumb and then they go, dang it, they unlocked my phone. So apparently, they sent a scan to an Anycubic Photon 3D LCD resin printer? Or hang on, what'd they do here? They snapped a photo of their fingerprint from a wine glass and used 3D editing software to add depth. They then sent the scan to an Anycubic Photon LCD resin printer, which cost around $460. After some trial and error on Dark Shark's part, it took the printer only about 13 minutes to print a phony biometric marker that fooled the scanner. Since our phones typically already have fingerprints on them, Dark Shark suggests it could take just 15 minutes to unlock a stolen device for someone with the means to do so. And they actually posted some video about it, but if you're listening to the audio version of it, you're totally missing out on this, and it's just a little GIF video. And apparently he succeeded in unlocking the phone. So there you go, guys. I probably shouldn't have shared that information with the rest of the world, because now the rest of the world is going to go, oh, this is a great idea. Hey, guys, you can do this now. We're going to just, like, print off fingerprints of people. Great. Well, you didn't hear it here, folks. You didn't hear it here. And finally, you guys are interested in the latest gadget news? Well, you can finally buy the $1,600 Red Hydrogen 1 Titanium phone, if you're insane. Now, there's been a lot of mixed reviews on this. Initially, when it came out, I was always interested in it. Apparently, it hasn't been performing up to par, but it's an incredible piece of machinery nonetheless. Now, it's rare we come across a phone we suggest to you do not buy under any circumstances, but the Titanium Red Hydrogen 1 earns that distinction. And this is coming from the AndroidPolice.com. Not Tech News Gadget, but I am a fan of the phone nonetheless. Because why, you wonder? They make really good video cameras. Like movie studio quality cameras. Red delayed the launch of the Titanium phone last year, but now you can buy it for $1,600 though. You shouldn't though. Red started taking pre-orders for the Titanium Hydrogen 1 at the same time as the aluminum phone. When it couldn't get the phone ready in time, the company sent free aluminum devices to the buyers, and now they're getting the promised titanium upgrade. It's also on sale in the official store for new customers, and it has... There's the photo of it. This phone is nuts. The titanium phone has all the same features and specs as the aluminum model, but it costs $1,595, roughly $1,600, instead of $1,300. As you may have gathered from their review that they have a link, we don't recommend buying the cheaper phone. You can be certain there's even less reason to spend another $300 on that titanium version. Still, someone probably will. And so I bet somebody's going to put diamonds all over this puppy and then say, hey, guys, check it out. I just made it like a 20 grand phone. I don't know. How about that? How about that? Well, there you go. There's all the news for today. I think that about wraps it up. Oh, well, you look at that. It does wrap it up. We're going on 35 minutes into the show, guys. Okay, so I should probably wrap up this show. And by the way, we actually did. So thanks for tuning in, guys. I appreciate you guys listening. New episodes coming out every weekday. The latest in tech news can be found on every major platform, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and Facebook Watch. If you enjoyed this episode, let us know and double check that you're subscribed and be sure to leave us a review so that you don't miss the next episode or, you know, share your thoughts with us, which is always appreciated. So I'm your host, Taylor Merrick, and remember, for the latest in tech, gadget, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys, and I'll see you on the flip side.